This is number 0096, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, once again, it's another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0096. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Leland Gregory, who is the author of S is for Stupid. The best stupidity in life isn't necessarily the one fueled by drugs or alcohol.
You know, drugs and alcohol are always going to make people as stupid as they can possibly be. That's your bottom line form of stupidity, because a lot of times when people are drunk or stupid, they act on impulse and they say, hey, this is a great idea. I'm going to pick up this cinder block and throw it through this window and steal all this alcohol, and not realizing that the window is plexiglass and the cinder block, of course, bounces off the plexiglass and knocks them out. See, I love stuff like that. But then you've got the people that think they're intelligent and then do stupid things. Those are the ones that we all love, because that's kind of the just dessert of criminal stupidity.
Dave Nierman is the author of Facebook Rules. What led him to writing this book?
I work for a large Fortune 500 company. Every day, someone else would have a different story, and it got thinking that, you know, there's probably a book in here. And the biggest thing that really pushed me over the edge is that my company actually wanted me to participate in social networking communications for the benefit of the company, but they actually blocked it for my personal use on the corporate computer. So it was really weird getting that message from HR to, hey, participate, and then when you try to log on to Facebook, you're blocked as a user.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
I'm Stuart Nullman, and on this edition of Book Banter, we take a peek at Tina Fey's bestseller Bossy Pants and some suggested titles about one of the shows that made her famous. That's coming up live from New York, well, not exactly, on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0096, is Susan Corinne, who is the person behind the website findingtheperfectjob.com, and there are dashes between all those. That's www.findingtheperfectjob.com. She's also the author of the soon-to-be-released The Job Hunter's Guide to Success with Social Media. So you can check that book out when it's available. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com and find links to Susan's website as well. And thank you very much, Susan, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? In Galesburg, Illinois, police arrested 35-year-old Carlina Lauren Kempf after she allegedly filled her tank and drove off without paying 8 times from the same gas station. Station manager Bradley Hopping told police the driver of the white Saturn had taken gas and driven off without paying 8 different times between May 19th and June 10th. The most recent time, he was able to get the license number. He provided police with the receipts of the thefts that gave the times and amounts of stolen gas. After being arrested, Kempf waived her Miranda rights and admitted to police that she did take the gasoline because A, she didn't have the money to pay for it, and B, her boyfriend made her do it. Okay. Dude, it took you 8 times to get the license number? I'm thinking I'd have written that puppy down somewhere around attempt number 3 at the latest. But, you know, if you're slow, you're slow, I guess. Meanwhile, after a Greenville, New Hampshire woman opened a sympathy card her husband's employer sent, she called the company to reveal the news that she wasn't dead. Over the roughly 2 years in which he told his coworkers, but not her, about his wife's battle with cancer, Scott Wellington, age 31, received weeks of extra vacation time and thousands of dollars in donations. "We were extra sympathetic to this guy," said Dan Villemaire, president of C&M Machine Company. "My father, Paul, the CEO of this company, is a cancer survivor. This really pulled at our heartstrings." Wellington quit after his wife's supposed death and has been charged with theft by deception. His wife doesn't have cancer and never did. I have a feeling that he's not going to be married too long either. Just going out on a limb. Meanwhile, police in Washington, the state of Washington, the city of Hoquiam, Washington to be exact, have arrested a 33-year-old man who burst into an apartment carrying a dead weasel and assaulted a man. According to the police report, the victim asked, "Why are you carrying a weasel?" The attacker answered, "It's not a weasel, it's a marten," then punched him in the nose and fled. A marten, by the way, is technically a member of the weasel family, but whatever. The attacker was apparently looking for his girlfriend and had gone to her former boyfriend's apartment where the victim was a guest. He left the dead weasel, or marten, or whatever it was, behind. Police later found the guy arguing with his girlfriend at another location and arrested him after a fight. He said he had found the marten already dead, but police have no idea why he picked it up and carried it with him. Well, pop goes the marten. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, David John Dombrowski was 63 when he died at his home. He had spent 36 years working for the Milwaukee's Department of Public Works, and apparently he loved his job. So much so that he, in his will, stated that everything goes to the department. Not to family, not to charity, but to the department that picks up trash, plows the snow, and beautifies the boulevards. City Attorney Grant Langley said, "It was a beautiful, thoughtful thing to do, a very nice thing to do, and a very unusual thing to do." He added that in his 40 years with the city, he cannot remember this happening before. At this point, it's unknown how much the total estate is worth, but a cousin of Dombrowski expressed how disappointed he was not to share in the windfall. And he said he thinks it's a lot because Dombrowski lived with his mother all of his life and held tight to his money. Dombrowski never married and had no children or siblings. His will named his mother as the beneficiary, but if she died before him, then the DPW would get everything, and she passed away in 2005 at the age of 84, so the city gets it all. City Attorney Langley anticipates it will be used for a specific project rather than just being folded into the DPW budget, saying, "We will do our best to put it to good use and do something that he would be proud of." Is that nice? Well, you know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. There is no God-given right that says your money has to go to family. If you earned it, you have the right to disperse of it however you see fit. As for the cousin who feels left out, here's a thought. Go out and make your own way in life rather than anticipating potential handouts coming your way. That's my 2 cents worth. Let's get to our first guest, shall we? Okay, anybody who listens to this show knows that our stock in trade are the bizarre and silly things that humans do, but nobody collects these items better than Leland Gregory, who has made a career out of it. His latest book is entitled S is for Stupid, and he joins us on the line from Nashville right now. Hi, Leland.
Hey, Peter. How you doing, buddy?
Just tickety-boo. Always glad to have a chance to talk to you, sir. You've got the latest book out, S is for Stupid. And I know I've asked this question of other guests who do similar type things, and I already know the answer because I do a similar type thing, and that is, do you ever worry that you're going to run out of stupidity?
No, because the blessing about working with in the field of stupidity is that stupid people breed. So there's always going to be the next generation of stupid people coming up shortly.
Now, do you quantify or qualify the different levels of stupidity? You know, there are some people who are stupid on their own. There are some people who are stupid when intoxicated or on something. There are some people who are stupid when they're in crowds. So...
Was that a Stanley Cup reference?
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah.
Well, you know what? I think for me, I like to give a mix. You know, drugs and alcohol are always going to make people as stupid as they can possibly be. I mean, that's just kind of that's your bottom line form of stupidity, because a lot of times when people are drunk or stupid, they act on impulse and they think, hey, this is a great idea. I'm going to pick up this cinder block and throw it through this window and steal all this alcohol, and not realizing that the window's plexiglass, and the cinder block, of course, bounces off the plexiglass and knocks them out. See, I love stuff like that. But then you've got the people that think they're intelligent and then do stupid things. Those are the ones that we all love, because it's kind of they're just desserts of criminal stupidity.
Well, the other side of the coin of worrying about whether you're going to run out of stuff, when you sit down to write a book like this, how do you know when to stop? When is the book done?
The good thing about this book is that it's an encyclopedia, so when I got to Z, I quit. But you know what? The thing about it is I've written several, sometimes like with criminals. I wrote a book in 95 called America's Dumbest Criminals, and then I wrote another book in 2002 called The Stupid Crook Book that was on ABC last night. So, I mean, I don't mind putting out various volumes of stupidity, but there's no way to encapsulate all of human stupidity between the covers of one book.
How did this all start for you?
Well, it was interesting. I was at a coffee house with a good friend of mine, and we were complaining about how talented we were and yet how broke we were at the same time. And we both had a lot of experience in television, so we started creating TV show ideas, and one of the show ideas we came up with was America's Dumbest Criminals. Well, we loved the idea. The title said it all. We got some financiers to fund a one-hour home video, and simultaneously, my partner knew a guy who was the president of a publishing house and told him the idea. The guy said, basically, if you write the book, I will publish it, you know, kind of a Field of Dreams thing. So we wrote the book, published it. I went to Chicago to train at Second City, met a guy from the Associated Press. He did an article about the book. It hit the newswire, and you know how powerful that is. And 2 months later, it was on the New York Times bestseller list. And I kind of went, oh, well, I'll do this again. I like this.
So how many books have you put out now?
I think I'm at 23.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that cool? So it's like I, you know, like we said, there's no end to stupidity. I've even done one called Canada, and I did one called the United Kingdom. So I'm branching out into other parts of the world now.
Yes, stupidity knows no borders. That's the thing.
No borders. That's right. That's a good one. No fence will stop stupidity from crying.
So tell me, so give us some of the examples of what we can find in this latest book, S is for Stupid, an Encyclopedia of Stupidity.
Sure, okay. Just off the top of my head, like the South Dakota Supreme Court upheld a divorce court ruling in September of 94 because the husband had a problem that his wife complained about, and she complained that he basically regularly passed odoriferous emissions as a retaliation thing. So basically he farted purposely in front of her, and the court said that's good enough to for a divorce on my part. I've got things like...
Well, that comes under the headline of chemical warfare.
Oh, I feel a rewrite coming now. The book also has like lots of actual newspaper headlines that may or may not have been intentionally funny. Like one was called, the quote was, "Shooting reported at firing range." And then I've got a little collection of people that have perfect names to suit their crimes. We have a arrest for public urination in Bowling Green by Mr. Joshua Pease. And I cite all my sources. That's the Sentinel Tribune, Bowling Green, Ohio, September 5th, 2001. So everything I quote and everything I write, I usually put a citation with it. Because, you know, honestly, I'm not smart enough to make some of this stuff up.
And to think this book came out before Wienergate.
Yeah, Wienergate was like a stand-up comics blessing. It's like manna from heaven, because I was reading a headline the other day, and again, I don't know if it was intentionally funny, but it said 70% of all voters want Wiener out. You know, so it's like, it's just too easy. But yeah, Wienergate.
Do you ever have difficulty sometimes doing the research? And the reason why I say that is each week I do this program and I look for stories in a similar vein. And sometimes I come across a story and I say, oh, come on, that can't be true. And I search high and low. I make phone calls. I try to find it because it's like just too ridiculous. Yet they usually are.
Absolutely. I have run across that where I'll say, no, there's no way that happened. And then I'll do some research and not find another source to back it up. And then I don't feel like I should use it because it could have been, you know, some newspaper reporter yanking somebody's chain. But usually I don't have a difficult time with the glory of the internet. A lot better than the good old days, man, when I used to take a bus down to the Harold Washington Library in Chicago and, like, Xerox magazines and take them back home and type them into my database. The old days are gone. But research, I mean, it's the whole core of the job that I do. I do research every day. I'll compile it, put it into a database. And then when my publisher and I discuss a potential book, I'll go through my database and see if I've got enough material to complete a book. The hardest book I had to research was Stupid American History, and the predecessor called Just Stupid History, because, you know, when you look for history stories, you go to history books, and the history books are the ones I'm saying you have gotten it wrong, so where do I go for my research? And that took a lot of work to get the research for those two books.
So has writing these books now become your life?
It's become a part of it. It's what we call in the freelance world my nut, you know, because I can depend on, you know, my royalties from it. And, you know, most people are labor of the misapprehension that authors make a lot of money, and we don't. I mean, unless you're a New York Times bestseller, John Grisham kind of selling guy, book authors don't make that much money. So I have to crank it out, baby. But fortunately, with 20 books, you know, I've kind of made a niche, as they say, created a cottage market of stupidity. I'm officially titled the official chronicler of human stupidity now. I have it on a mug, so I know it's real.
So you're not going to run out of ideas for books, but are you going to run out of ideas for subsections, genres, or titles?
Well, you know, I'm wondering about that because I'm doing two books are coming out next year for the election. One's called Stupid Liberals, and the other one is called Stupid Conservatives, because I'm an equal opportunity stupid finger pointer. And then I've got one called Stupid Sports coming up and one called Stupid Ancient History, which I know is going to give me a lot of grief. But so far, I haven't run out of topics yet. But if you've got any ideas, please let me know.
Well, the latest book is, what did you say, number 20?
20-something.
20-something.
Yeah. Well, some have gone out of print and then come back as editions, so I don't really know how to count them sometimes.
Whatever happened, by the way, to that television show that was the genesis of putting this whole thing together?
That's an interesting subject, my friend. I had a signed contract with the producers of the show to serve as head writer, executive producer, and actor, and they kind of decided to forget that I had signed a contract with them. And they went ahead and did the show without paying me. So my only contact with that show was through a really big lawsuit.
And stupid lawsuits could be a whole other book.
You know what? I wrote one called Presumed Ignorant, which had a lot of, I love that title too, has a lot of stupid lawsuits. And I think it's about time for another legal book.
Excellent.
With all the legal stuff going on.
Well, the current book is called S is for Stupid, an Encyclopedia of Stupidity, and it's written by Leland Gregory. And Leland, I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Hey, man. Anytime. I love talking to you, my friend.
Leland Gregory, author of S is for Stupid. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0096, and you'll find links to Amazon.com where you can order his book for the Kindle directly. Oh, I love my Kindle.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the author of Facebook Rules, and we'll have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nellman. Plus, we have an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news, including right here, right now. And at this juncture, we have another edition of something we don't do very often, and that would be the Charlie Sheen Award.
You borrow my brain for 5 seconds and just be like, dude, can't handle it. Unplug this bastard, yeah.
Yes, we don't give these out very often, but occasionally someone does earn it. When somebody does something completely asinine while under the influence. And you can judge for yourself if this story is romantic or just plain creepy.
You know, I got tiger blood, man.
In Poland, 40-year-old Jan Rudnicki thought he was being very romantic. After a night of drinking, he decided he would win over his heart's desire. That would be the heart of divorcee Gosia Domoslowska, by stripping to the waist and riding into her home on horseback. So he galloped up her garden path and smashed his way through the front door like a battering ram. Gosia didn't quite see it as the ultimate chivalry and quickly called police. She said, "He's a loon. I was at home watching TV with my daughter when I heard this deafening crash and suddenly this half-naked man on a horse appeared in my front room." She added, "I never fancied him before and I certainly don't now. If this was supposed to win my heart, he must be seriously off his rocker." Yan has apologized and offered to replace the door, but a police spokesperson said, "Smashing into someone's home uninvited is a crime, and he will be punished for it." So poor romantic Yan could be looking at up to 5 years in prison. And for this bold act of under-the-influence stupidity, he earns the Charlie Sheen Award.
Wow, winning.
I am on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen.
Wear it well, pal. Wear it well. Elsewhere, police in Germany were stunned when they pulled over a white van and found a Mazda 626 resting on its side in the back of the white van. Apparently, two men from Kazakhstan had decided to save on the cost of a trailer after purchasing the car to ship back home. Now, when the car didn't fit in the van right side up, they called a few buddies and actually lifted the Mazda, turned it on its side, and then loaded it into the van. It was put on top of mattresses to avoid scratching the door. Police pulled men over after witnessing the van rocking from side to side. The van and the car were confiscated, and the men were told that they would have to transport the car on a proper car trailer in order to continue their journey. A police spokesperson said, "It was bizarre. I have no idea how they got the car into the van, as it would be very heavy." Now, amazingly, the car didn't have a scratch on it, even though it had been rocking from side to side in the van. Now, there's thrifty, and then there's cheap. How many people do you have to convince that this is a good idea to get them to physically load the car into the van? Say what you will, even if he is completely cheap, he's got some pretty decent friends. That's all I have to say. Anyway, moving right along, bragging is never really an attractive quality. It's especially harmful if you do it on Facebook about all the money you just won in a big court settlement. But in Alton, Missouri, one young woman just couldn't resist the temptation to let the world know that she had a judicial good fortune, which led to a nasty home invasion when two men wearing bandanas broke into her home and held residence at gunpoint looking for the money. While they didn't actually get any money, they did steal some personal belongings and scare the crap out of everyone. Alton Police Department Chief of Detective Scott Galicki said, "This is a good lesson about how not to use Facebook." Fortunately, police have strong leads regarding identity of the suspects and believe they will be arrested. And we have another Facebook-related story, which ironically leads to our next guest, which is Facebook-related, but I'm getting ahead of myself. For all the good and entertainment Facebook provides, it sure does get a lot of idiots in trouble these days. In London, a British juror may get more jail time than the defendant after she contacted her on Facebook during the trial, causing the collapse of a major drugs case. In what is believed to be the first case of its kind in Britain involving the internet, juror Joanne Frail admitted contempt of court at the High Court in London for chatting online with Jamie Seward during a trial last year. Britain's Lord Chief Justice, Igor Judge, warned the sobbing woman he would not think there was any circumstances under which she could avoid jail. In this case, a maximum of 2 years in prison. The judges also found that Seward, who ended up being acquitted during the trial last August, has also committed contempt by asking Frail for details of the jury's deliberations, and they have to deal with an appeal by Seward's boyfriend, Gary Knox, who was convicted in the drugs case, but argues that his sentence should be overturned because of misconduct by the jury. Yeah. Fun with Facebook, which, by the way, leads to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Millions of people are on Facebook, but many don't seem to know what they should or shouldn't do on the social network. Well, Dave Nierman is a communications expert and the author of Facebook Rules, and he joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Now, I keep hearing stories about people who constantly seem to get themselves in trouble. And there's that old rule that ignorance is not bliss, or not knowing what you should know is an excuse. Do you find there are a lot of people who just don't get it when it comes to social networking?
I do. And I think almost every week we hear of another public official or elected official or someone in prominence in the community that are getting caught doing naughty stuff on Facebook.
Is it just the fact that people haven't been able to grasp the growth of social networks? They think that, you know, they're talking to a few friends and it's not going to explode. It's not going to be bigger than the few friends they're talking to. I mean, just recently we hear stories about, you know, somebody who invites friends to their birthday party and 1,600 people show up.
Right. Now, I do think a lot of that's going on. People are new to it. people in power, they're just not used to having that type of oversight, you know, over them, run into that trouble the most. It is www.facebook, World Wide Web, and I think people don't realize that it truly is worldwide when you publish that information on the site.
Were there any stories or any incidents that made you say, okay, I've really got to write this book, Facebook Rules?
You know, I work for a large Fortune 500 company, and every day someone else would have a different story, and it got to thinking that, you know, there's probably a book in here. And the biggest thing that really pushed me over the edge is that my company actually wanted me to participate in social networking communications for the benefit of the company, but they actually blocked it for my personal use on the corporate computer. So it was really weird getting that message from HR to, hey, participate, and then when you try to log on to Facebook, you're blocked as a user. So obviously you want to exploit the marketing aspects of it, but they actually don't want you speaking to your friends during the day. So it was these things plus just the crazy stories from very normal people that was the impetus for me doing this study, which was basically a two-year study, a social experiment of my life on Facebook.
Okay, well, let's start with your company, for instance. Your company said they wanted you on Facebook. I hearken back to the days when the World Wide Web first started taking off, and everyone said, you got to have a website. And people were getting websites, but not really knowing why. Are we there now with social networking?
Corporate America is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, every large company now has someone that's really in charge of social networking for the firm. And the actual budgets have increased, and the percentages are going from an advertising to social networking marketing dollars. That's from a global perspective.
Okay, so let's talk about the whole friends thing, which, since we're talking about Facebook. What's the worst type of friend to have?
There's a few. I would say your boss is probably right up there. So companies are really looking to leverage your personal connections, because they know if you recommend something they do, it's a lot more powerful than a pop-up ad. That's why they want to be friends with you. So, but that creates an awkward situation if you're truly not friends with this person, because you're probably sharing some personal information you don't want your boss to know. So I would say your boss is right up there. If you're a boss listening to this, stop friending people in your company.
Okay, well, let me ask this question. Let's say your boss wants to become your friend. Is it almost politically incorrect to say no?
No, it's not politically incorrect to say no. That's the right thing. That's what I'm saying. It just creates a sticky situation when you have to reject that friend's request from that boss. So I tackle that issue in a humorous way and give you a lot of strategies to come back to your boss without, you know, hurting his feelings or, you know, potentially losing your job because you rejected a friend request on Facebook. Sounds silly, but a lot of people face this issue.
Okay, how many friends do you have on Facebook?
You know, people ask me that all the time. So is it Facebook friend count you're looking for, or real friends? Some people distinguish. I have about 200 Facebook friends, maybe 220. And then for the book side, I have about 2,000 fans.
Well, I was also about to ask, how many Facebook accounts do you have?
Well, I have two main. One is just my personal account, where people can just friend me. And I think you're one of my friends today on my account. And then I have a fan site for my book, Facebook Rules. And then that's pretty much it. I have another one just for development purposes.
Now, there are some people, you say you should never accept a friend request from your spouse?
Well, I think that gets tricky, right? But a lot of times there's confliction of what's going on. So if you have an open relationship, you should really have nothing to hide. But it really puts a damper, especially if it's a commingled account. And maybe that's what I mentioned. So I've received requests from people that share their accounts, and people I haven't spoken to in 20 years. So if you want to just recount your relationship or your past history together, it is kind of strange when you get another reply from that spouse's that's the spouse of the person you're talking to that you don't even know. So that's what I was trying to get across there.
Hmm. Now, let's talk about your own account. Do your friends go back to people you, say, went to grade school with or past relationships?
Yeah, and still, I still get a great kick out of it. In school, I was a very mild-mannered kid, shy, kind of ugly. And just the other day, I got a friend request from someone I haven't spoken to in about 30 years, and she was one of the cool, good-looking kids. This girl's name was Lynn. So when I got that request, I was just so happy, and then we had what I call the fire hose effect. She tells me everything that's happened the last 30 years in her life. I tell her everything the last 30 years of my life. Couple more exchanges, everything comes out like a fire hose of water, and now she's been on my account for a couple of months, so we don't speak. That's why people love Facebook.
Do you find that, because with Facebook, there's instant messaging, chat, sending messages, poking, which is something that truly annoys me, but anyway, that's another story entirely. Do you find that people aren't really themselves on Facebook?
Yeah, I do. You're able to get a separate persona on Facebook so that, the shy kid or the kid who wasn't friends with a lot of people can be the bold guy. People write songs about that. So absolutely. They even lie, believe it or not, on Facebook. They'll tell you a different relationship status. That's a big issue. It's quoted as driving up the divorce rate, just the whole aspect of being able to contact anyone with a matter of a few clicks. So absolutely.
On a more serious note, is Facebook used to bully?
That's a big issue, especially with teenage girls. So we see a lot of that, and there's been deaths. So in the U.S., there's been new legislation put up in front of the different states. There's been a lot of different cyberbullying teachings that have been implemented in the different districts across the country. My wife is very close to that, so I'm pretty much up on all the information that's being affected from the cyberbullying perspective. And it is a growing concern, and a bigger issue is the parents. A lot of the parents are not in tune to this fact of the cyberbullying nature, and they need to be. So that's what's going on in the school districts, across the U.S. at least, is teaching the kids as well as the parents after school about this issue and how they need to be integrated with their kids' account, believe it or not. And that's a whole other issue.
You've written this book, Facebook Rules. Have you heard from anybody officially from Facebook?
I've been on a lot of shows across the U.S., syndicated shows, and I never got that question. That's an excellent question, Peter. I want to thank you for asking me that. The answer is no. I actually sent Facebook, the corporation, and Zuckerberg, the CEO, a bunch of books about, and then a nice little letter of what I'm doing, because I'm using the sales of my books to raise money for cancer research, and I didn't even get a response back, not even a form letter or anything from the company.
You mentioned cancer research. I believe you're raising money for the Jimmy V Foundation?
Yeah, Jimmy V, if you don't know who that was, he was a championship NCAA coach, and then he became a national broadcaster, won awards for his broadcasting ability. He was one of our country's great communicator in the U.S. And in the final months of his life, he was came down with cancer, and instead of giving up, he formed a foundation. So he spent his energies in his last few months of his life to form a foundation for cancer research. And what drove me to his foundation is, one, we're both New Yorkers, so I have a sort of a natural bond there. But one day, my wife took my daughter for her basic checkup. She's a toddler, 3 years old at the time, and I was at work. Usually I go along, but I didn't go that day. And then she calls me frantically saying, we're at the doctors, and they're telling us we need to go to the hospital immediately to check in for cancer screening. So she's going crazy, and obviously I was upset. So everything has turned out all right, but literally it could just strike you like that, and the next day your life is affected, and maybe you're here no longer. So that really drove me to the V Foundation. So everything I do, from selling these books and there's other products along with it, we donate about 20% of the proceeds right to the V Foundation.
Excellent. We should mention Jimmy V is Jimmy Valvano, right?
Exactly. It's his fault, Jimmy Valvano, the late Jimmy Valvano, great coach, NC State fame, and he worked for ESPN. And the great thing about this foundation, if you're thinking about giving, you don't have to buy my book. You could just go and donate directly through FacebookRules.com website as well. We provide a link there. But ESPN, the network, pays for a lot of the administrative expenses of the foundation. So they are literally ranked as one of the most efficiently run charity organizations globally. And there's a site called the Charity Navigator that shows you the ratings. So basically the most money, every dollar you donate directly for research goes there. It doesn't go to their administrative expenses.
Excellent. The book is called Facebook Rules. It's written by Dave Nierman. And again, the website is?
It's FacebookRules.com. And if you want to not get it through that site, you can actually check out Borders or Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much, Dave, for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me here today. It was a pleasure.
Dave Nierman, author of Facebook Rules. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0096. And you'll find links to Dave's website, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Should a pub or bar or party host be held responsible if a person of legal drinking age leaves their place of business or home, drives while drunk, causes a crash, and injures himself? Many courts have allowed lawsuits like this. So, a few years ago, New Jersey enacted a law that prohibits drunk drivers from recovering damages for injuries they cause to themselves. After that law was passed, a drunk driver in New Jersey hurt himself while driving and sued the bar where he'd been drinking. Despite that law, the state Supreme Court allowed his lawsuit. Let's be fair, drunk driving is not only a safety issue, but in many states, courts are saying it's a legal issue for those who served the alcohol, too. More and more courts are ignoring personal responsibility and shifting the blame to those who serve the drinks. So, have fun this summer, but please be careful, whether you're driving or hosting a party. It's one more thing to think about in the most lawsuit-happy society on Earth. Go to our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And it's time to crack a spine. Once again, we have with us Stuart Nauman and another edition of Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Just tickety-boo.
Hey, summer's here.
Yes, it is.
About time, too.
Hot and sticky.
Yes. Well, after cold and chilly and damp for the past few months, I mean, this is much more welcome, actually.
Well, you know what? I'm an optimist. We have a planet that has an atmosphere. That's all I ask for.
Yeah, that's what happened to the global warming I've been hearing about for so long.
Exactly.
I know not. Well, I got some summer reading that I'd like to suggest, but on this edition of Book Banter, to start off your summer reading habit, I'm going to go with someone who you see on television quite a lot, actually. You know, after seeing her as one half of the Weekend Update anchor team on Saturday Night Live for nearly a decade ago, she hosted a memorable Just for Last Gala in 2003, if you remember that one. I watched in wonder her dead-on Sarah Palin impression on Saturday Night Live during the heat of the 2008 presidential campaign and developed a liking for her Emmy-winning sitcom 30 Rock. And I'm amazed at the talent of this true comedy renaissance person who we call Tina Fey. And after reading her offbeat memoir, Bossy Pants, my admiration for this multi-talented individual has increased exponentially. You know, it's interesting to discover that one of the most respected comic writers, actors of today rose from such a geeky upbringing in Philadelphia, and through circumstances that is a mix of the mundane and the poignant, with a dash of the tragic to make things a little bit more interesting, actually. You know, some things I've really found it very interesting when I read this book. For example, like during her teenage years, she got her acting chops developed over a couple of summers with a community program called Summer Showtime when she moved to Chicago to go on be part of Second City Troupe. She worked for a time in the Chicago suburb of Evanston at the local YMCA, witnessing both sides of the tracks under its roof, from the yuppie clients who went out for their morning workouts to disadvantaged who made the YMCA's hotel their home and whose highlight was the Christmas dinner where everyone got tube socks for a gift. But Faye also gives an interesting yet somewhat bizarre inside look at two of comedy's greatest institutions, the Second City and Saturday Night Live. Now, on the Saturday Night Live part of it, the behind-the-scenes look that she offers in Bossy Pants about SNL is probably one of the best that I've read in over 25 years. She tells of career producer Lorne Michaels' edicts about producing a live TV show, for example, and this is what Michaels always told the cast and crew. Like, the show doesn't go on because it's ready. It goes on because it's 11:30. Hmm. Or, don't make any big decisions right after the season ends. Well, I wonder what would happen after that. How she, there's Sarah Palin impersonation that won her that Emmy, was actually, Lorne waited to the last minute before they actually started those sketches of her as Palin. And then there was the male writing staff's propensity to urinate in jars and keep them on their desk for extended periods of time. Like, they never heard of a washroom over at 30 Rock? I don't know. But there's more than just showbiz stories in this book. There's quite a few interesting personal stories that are in this book that are very enjoyable. Like, one of my favorites was how she took, do you know about how a family Christmas spent in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, did more to bring together both sides of the family in harmony than a Christmas vacation in Aspen or the Caribbean could ever do, and maybe could turn the home of the Little League World Series into a future ideal Yuletide family vacation spot.
By the way, I'm still thinking about that urinating in jars. Was that just the men or the women too?
That was the men.
Okay, just want to clarify.
Yeah, just the male staff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Someone had, you know, the other half had, you know, much proper bathroom etiquette. Well, you know what? When you read this book, Bossy Pants, it's a well-rounded comedy book that doesn't try too hard to amuse, entertain, and to tell an interesting story. It's another example that proves that Tina Fey still wears the bossy pants in the comedy world today. It's a very interesting book and worth all the... You can understand why it became such a huge bestseller and still is riding high on the bestseller list, actually.
Others you recommend?
Well, if you like Saturday Night Live books, there's three I have to recommend very, very highly. One was the first book that was put out by Saturday Night Live. It was a collection of scripts and... it's like a scrapbook kind of book that was put together by Ann Beats in 1977. On the picture of on the cover is a picture of Francisco Franco, who was still dead. Excellent book, but hard to find. But secondhand bookstores can't go wrong. Then the first insider account of Saturday Night Live, called Saturday Night by Doug Hill and Jeff Weingrad, that was published in 1986. And also Tom Shales, Washington Post TV critic, put an excellent oral history of Saturday Night Live called Live from New York. And if you can find these books, I recommend them highly. Great inside stuff of how the series was developed, how it was created, and a lot of the controversies that went on with the show. And like I said, if you want to read some of your favorite routines of the early years, get Ann Beat's book with the picture of Francisco Franco, who's still dead.
As you know, I'm a big proponent of the Kindle.
Right.
Love it to death. And Tina Fey's book, as you mentioned, is on the bestseller list and was high on the charts. Another entertainment book that was very, very high on the charts, and it was a toss-up as to which one I was going to get. And the only reason I got the other one is because Tina Fey's book, at the time I was looking to get it, was not available for the Kindle except in audio form where she reads it herself. And I prefer to read it myself than have her read it. Nothing against Tina, but I like to read my books. So instead, I got the book by Rob Lowe, Stories I Only Tell My Friends, which is also very, very high on the bestseller list, and it is an amazing book. So I highly recommend that one. I will now get the Tina Fey book as soon as it's available on the Kindle. But the Stories I Only Tell My Friends, extremely well written by Rob Lowe, and he's got a great style. And ironically, his is one of the ones I might be interested in getting as an audiobook because he is a very good impressionist of the actors he's worked with, and in the audio version of that book, he does all the character voices.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's not just Rob Lowe doing a, you know, sort of a monotone type of delivery. It's like, how can I say, it's a man of a thousand voices.
Exactly. So that's something you might want to check into. But anyway, getting back to Tina Fey, the book is called
Bossy Pants, and it's by Tina Fey, published by Regan Arthur. It's a division of Little Brown, and it's $29.99.
And if people want to find you, how can they do so?
Well, they can read me every week in the West End Times on paper, but if you don't happen to get your hands on a copy, just go to www.westendtimes.ca, and there you can find me.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Hey, you're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
The Stuff File.
And we have a few more items to go in Stuff File news before we get to our idiot of the day. An escaped convict was caught following a day on the loose after he knocked on a cabin door, only to find out that the man renting the lodge was an off-duty guard at the prison he just fled. Authorities said 39-year-old James Edward Russell took off from the Washington State Penitentiary one morning. Early the next day, Russell, still wearing his prison uniform, went to the cabin asking to use the phone. After a scuffle, Russell ran off again. The guard, whose name was being withheld by authorities, reported the incident, and Russell was caught a few hours later. He had been serving time for forgery and theft. And I tell you, if this guy didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. Meanwhile, in Hudson, Florida, James Taylor, no, not the singer, decided to celebrate his 58th birthday by drinking 48 beers. He was found by police on Hudson Beach shouting at people, so a deputy gave him a stern talking to. So Mr. Taylor left, but then he came back. This time, his rants were so fierce that he terrified a grandmother and her young grandchildren. Then he exposed his genitals, urinated in the sand, and continued yelling profanities. This time, the deputy returned and arrested him for public intoxication and disorderly conduct. He told the officer the 48 beers he drank was probably about 10 too many. Gee, I'm thinking more like 46 too many, but whatever. And unfortunately, you hear about husbands hitting wives all too often, but usually it's not with a peanut butter sandwich. In Palm Beach, Florida, a 24-year-old woman told police that her 26-year-old husband got into an argument over money, so he allegedly hit her in the face with a peanut butter sandwich. When police arrived, the woman still had some peanut butter on the side of her face and in her hair, according to the report. Sadly, the report didn't specify whether the peanut butter was creamy, crunchy, or extra crunchy, nor did it state whether the bread was white, wheat, whole grain, cinnamon raisin, a baguette, a bagel, or gluten-free. Of course, the husband said it was his wife who hit him, since neither reported being injured or complained of pain. The police simply left. And while we're on the topic of peanut butter, a Battle Creek, Michigan woman is asking authorities to file assault charges against her husband's ex-wife for sending him a letter smeared with peanut butter. According to police, the woman said she is highly allergic to peanuts and that she believed putting peanut butter on a bill sent to her husband was an attempt to harm her. The woman told police she came home during her lunch break and found an envelope in the mailbox addressed to her husband with oil soaking through to the outside. On the outside of the envelope was writing indicating that it contained peanut butter. An officer told the woman charges may not be possible without proof of intent to harm. The case is being reviewed by the Calhoun County Prosecutor's Office. When interviewed by police, the ex-wife said she did not intend to cause any harm and that the peanut butter was meant to keep her ex-husband's wife from reading mail that did not involve her. Wow. I'm beginning to understand why her ex-husband divorced her. Sending peanut butter through the mail to an allergic person? Well, that's just nuts. Anyway, it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
In Sheboygan, Wisconsin, two brothers ended up getting themselves arrested and are now facing jail time for fighting over a bottle of shampoo. I'm not kidding. 32-year-old Jonathan R. Pippert and 27-year-old Jared J. Pippert came to blows at their home where both losers still live with their mother. Jonathan faces up to 2 years behind bars due to prior offenses, while his brother faces a maximum of 90 days. Police were called by neighbors who heard the disturbance. Officers found Jonathan on the front lawn swearing at his mother. He and his brother both had scrapes and bruises all over their upper bodies. Apparently, the fight broke out after Jonathan went into his brother's bedroom and took a bottle of shampoo while Jared was still in bed. Each claimed the other started the fight. Oh, their mother must be so proud. Well, jail time could bring new meaning to split ends. In any case, how can two grown men get into a knockdown, drag-out fight over shampoo? One reason, and one reason only. It's very simple. They're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0096. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And at the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0096. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can find a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.